You are listening to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and role-playing gamers.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and the people who play them. My name is Eran Aviram.
My name is Uri Lifshitz. Hello!
And this episode is special because it's about the special episode, that unusual, unique session that you are running for your players. Why should you do that? Because it's awesome. How should you do that? Let us explain. We have several suggestions of how to run a special, unusual, unique,
amazing
session that can not only be, you know, fun for everyone, but also maybe advance the narrative and even have a theme. Uri, why should we even have a special episode, special session?
First off, it's fun. It's a fun break from the routine. It's a chance to go from, hey, we're doing this game every week, to, hey, something has happened. Let's reevaluate what we do and how we do it. It keeps the tension going, the tension of what's going to happen this week, to be more than just how will the plot advance and what will my character do. It gives that grand open feeling of, hey, I'm not even sure if the game this week is going to be a simple role-playing game or something more. It's also a grand tool to make some in-game event more unique, and it's allow us to do things that the regular rules or the setting might not be well suited to. You can use this to expand on specific milestones, like we've discussed in our milestones episode. We'll provide a link in the show notes, or to use it to explore other uncharted territories within your character, your setting, or your game.
Yes, if there's something that you want to emphasize, what better way to do so than to change the format of the session itself, to do something different around the table in the way that you process the game.
I bet you listen to this episode and you're thinking, cool, I'm going to do one of those special episode thingies. But when? And I would heartily encourage you to use this special episode to celebrate an event. And that event could be an event in play, like the Grand King offer us this wonderful reward, or an off-play event, like, hey, one of the players is having a birthday. You can use this to celebrate an adventure finale, a campaign finale, a player's birthday, like I mentioned, a momentous event, or simply something that the mechanic doesn't support, etc., etc., etc. This can be a representation of something more grand than the usual scope or scale of your games, or something small and personal. Now, I imagine you're asking yourself, how would one go about creating this special session? Well, we have some suggestions for you. The first one, and maybe the easiest, is simply to plan an extended session. I would call this an all-nighter, but don't let the name fool you. This can be done during the day or any other time. Simply having a gaming session that is far longer than your usual already leads to some extra excitement. Another one of my favorite special session is a childhood encounter. This is a session where we play our characters in their youth. Now, this could be as far back as playing toddlers. If you're watching anime, this could be a chibi version of your character. Imagine this great heroic warlock of a creature as a six-year-old, still playing with sticks and stones and dreaming of one day maybe summon demons. This can be all the players playing children, where they actually get to know each other in the village where they grew up, or actual teens in their apprenticehood. This is an amazing chance to build the relationships between the characters, or simply to parody some of the more serious character and contrast them with how they were in their youth. Now, this next special episode is one of my personal favorite cheats. It's called Playing the Baddies, and this is a session where you let the players play the villains of your campaign. Now, in pretty much most of my campaigns, I never plan the villains. I think it's creating a great villain is a lot and a lot of work. So I basically write a one-line description, like the evil wizard. I give him a name, Karzug the Terrible, and I give him a one-line description. This is actually a polymorph ice dragon who's dying to get recognition. And I would create some of these. I would hand them out to the players, and I would tell them, good morning, now we're playing the Evil League of Evil. You each play this specific villain, and you are discussing the topic of which village should we burn next. And these are your options. And this usually gives a lot of flavor and a lot of personality to each and every one of those baddies. And eventually, when these players are going to have to face these villains sometime in the campaign, this would be a lot more interesting than just confronting a specific villain that I made up and they have no way of really getting to know.
I think we've actually discussed this in our episode about creating an interesting villain, which you suggested this approach, which I really like, because a lot of the time, as you just said, the players face the villain in a single encounter, they defeat them, and they continue on. And then they never actually got to, you know, interact with the villain, make them into a villain and not just an obstacle, a one-time obstacle. So when you give them as characters to the players, for some groups it might seem insane. you give the players the ability to play the villains, but as long as it's detached enough from what is currently happening, I mean, you don't actually give the players the villains as the PCs enter the dungeon, which will then, in a way, face them against themselves. You give them some other time. You make some sort of a story about them that allows the players to get to know them. And that's great. That's really useful.
Another all-time favorite of mine is the Lower Deck episode, named after the Star Trek episode. This is basically where you let your players take on the roles of the seemingly unimportant NPCs in your world. This is usually either they play the crew of the ship in which they currently sail, or they play the maid and the cook in the castle where the ultimate battle is about to happen. This is an amazing way to let the player see how their characters and the villains and the conflict between them is seen from the eyes of the regular folks. The people who are usually not counted when we discuss what happened in the gaming session.
I really like this sort of episode because it gives a whole new perspective on what's happening and really helps establish the player characters as heroes, people who are unusual and above the normal.
I'm going to give some example of shows and computer games that did this remarkably well, in my opinion. In Babylon 5, Season 5, Episode 4, there's an episode called A View from the Gallery. And for those who don't know the series, Babylon 5 is a space station. There's the ultimate battle between good and evil, blah, blah, blah. Everything is very big. And suddenly comes this episode about two janitors who are simply going about to clean this specific room. And there's this huge battle in the background, amazing explosion, alien races. You can see traces of it, but always in the background. And the focus of the entire story is these two janitors just trying to get the job done. And all the fuss, all the excitement that is usually present for all the other episodes is just troublesome for them. Because they just need to get their job done. And they're not interested about grand battles of good and evil. They just want to get through the day and go back to their family. Another interesting example is the Mass Effect 2 game, in which you play an amazing soldier, Commander Shepard, and you fight aliens, and you win battles, and you destroy armadas, and you're dealing with the fate of the universe. But in one small episode, you suddenly shift, and you play the ship pilot, who's this guy who has a medical condition, he has really breakable bones, he has low stats on everything, and there's alien attacking the ship, and you're playing him with the sole purpose of trying to limp your way to the escape pod. That's all you gotta do in this level. You limp slowly away till you hopefully manage to avoid dying and get to an escape pod. And it suddenly put everything else into perspective. What's it like not being a super soldier capable of doing anything? And I would go with a classic example. There's an amazing play called Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead. Now, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, to those who may not be aware, are two really minor characters in Shakespeare's Hamlet. They're two childhood friends of Hamlet whom the king calls over so they will try to make Hamlet happy. And they have a really, really minor role in the play. And in this specific play, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, we see the whole story of Hamlet as told from the point of view of these two NPCs. And what's it like to be an NPC in such a grand story? So take the time and maybe give your players that specific chance of seeing the world not through the eyes of adventurers, but through the eyes of simple NPCs milling about, just trying to scrape a living. Now, another great approach is to simply use a different mechanic than usual. Now, Eran did this several times, and would you like to expand on that?
So what we mean here is not just that, okay, well, let's use the chase mechanics this time. I mean something a few steps further than that. The best example is the Battle for Sicilia's Mind. A few years back, Uri and I and several of our friends played in a group that was called the Purple Orange, and we had a character who was assaulted by a divine malevolent force that tried to sort of destroy her soul from within. So, in order to make this inner conflict an outer conflict, in order to make this something that all of the party can enjoy and not just something that that single player, the player of Sicilia, would have to face, I made this into, let's call it a level, inside Sicilia's mind. And in order to make sure that this doesn't just feel like a normal combat encounter, we were playing D&D 4, and of course, there was going to be combat. This is a fight for her life. But in order for this to feel different, essentially different, I turned it into a tower defense game. That is, enemies kept pouring into the field, which was actually three different places that represented three different memories of Sicilia. The enemies were these black corrupting influences that used the statistics for goblins. I don't remember, something like that. And every so often, a bigger enemy would come, especially if the smaller enemies managed to break through some barrier. And those big enemies were these huge, monstrous impulses that the party, technically it wasn't the party, it was the memories and thoughts of Sicilia, of these party members, they were everyone reflected inside her mind.
It was a mental representation of her friends who help her overcome the difficulties.
Exactly. So they fought these boss monsters and they used soul points in order to build what was essentially towers, just like in a tower defense game. It was awesome. It was great. I remember it.
It was.
Yeah, I remember it to this day because it was so unusual. And it really did deliver the point. It was a battle. It was for her soul. And when her soul got corrupted, when they didn't manage to steer off enough of those waves, it did have an effect later on. She wasn't completely corrupted, but there was a shadow in her mind. Another thing that happened later in the campaign was when we assaulted the Tomb of Horrors. Now, that's an old and legendary tomb from the earlier days of D&D that has a lot of importance in the culture around D&D. Many players know it, even if they haven't played it. By the way, it's pretty shitty. It's not a very good dungeon. Yes, it's deadly, but it's not deadly in an interesting way, I think. It doesn't matter. I really wanted to have the Tomb of Horror. There were several reasons for it at that time. But I wanted the players to feel as if they are assaulting a legendary place. And not only that, but the legendary Tomb of Horror itself. The problem is, some of my players didn't think it was legendary. They knew nothing of it. They just heard of the Tomb of Horror. They've never actually, for example, heard of the Demon Face, which is an icon that is always reflected in a tomb and always has something to do with it. So I had to teach them. And in order to do that, and, you know, it still had to be fun and part of the game, I said, okay, let's play Tomb of Horror, the original game, in the original D&D, using the basic rules where you are either an elf or a fighter. I created, I think, like 30 tiny little characters, handed them out, and they died in troves because it's a very deadly dungeon. The players played them as sort of memories or relics of the past that came into the mind of the player characters as they were approaching this place, sort of like ghostly illusions that allowed the player characters to later on learn from the mistakes of previous adventurers, because the players, of course, knew everything. They just ran through this dungeon, and that allowed them to run through the dungeon while being aware that it's legendary and very dangerous. The player just lost a gazillion characters in there. But without it actually being all that dangerous for the player characters themselves. That was awesome. Most of the game was in the past. Most of the game was in obscure ancient rules. And when we returned to the present, we just cruised through it. And the experience was had without it taking too much time or too much effort. And that was worth even learning the rules for basic D&D.
I think the main benefit here was that you created a show-don't-tell attitude for an amazing background to something that happened inside the game. We all felt that this is something terribly dangerous and that countless adventurers have died in because we were the adventurers who died in that place.
Right, right. Good point.
Moving on to another special session could be a special session for a specific character. You could play a momentous event from a specific character's past. This is a great chance for character development, for helping players really get to know their characters, or for giving more context for the other players as well to understand this specific character.
And this is what we did with Cecilia. The Battle for Her Soul was an important point. The player really wanted this to have an influence on what's going forward. And he wanted to make sure that this is an interesting thing that happens in her story. However, we also wanted everyone to have a part in it. So we decided to do it in play, around the table, and as an encounter. That's how it became the thing from that we've just mentioned before.
Another great way to do a special episode is simply to play the game in a special location. Me and a few friends many years ago decided to do a road trip to the Yechiam Renaissance Fair. It's a Renaissance Fair up north in Israel. And while there, we took the afternoon and went inside an ancient burial mound. It sounds really awesome, but basically, you know, it's just a cave with a lot of alcoves in it. And we simply sat down on the dirt and played a special episode. Now, I, of course, planned ahead for this special episode to be a retro episode of the dwarven city where they were just about to enter. Each one of the players got the character of one of the ancient dwarves. And they played the final days of this underground city, which awesome. Was the whole point because we were underground. And eventually, of course, the city was ruined. And into those ruins, their current character would eventually go. And simply playing inside an underground burial mound really added that extra flavor to, wow, this we have talked in this game about huge keeps and amazing riches, and all that's left is pretty much what we see around. This is just alcoves filled with ancient junk. Really put perspective on things. And of course, we can take these two things that we've mentioned and do a special episode for a specific player's birthday. Now, last year, my wife had a birthday, and during that gaming session, as a birthday present, we did a special episode on her character. And her specific character was facing a choice whether she wants to join the summer court and become a fairy or not. And she got a glimpse into the future, seeing how she would develop, possibly, based on her choice. So the other three players simply had new character sheets with different versions, more powerful versions, of her current character. So she could interact with the possible futures of her choice. Again, something very focused on a specific character and on a specific player, which might not be a good idea to perform, to overly perform, as it gets old really quick. Now, I'm sure we're all agreeing that tabletop role-playing is pretty much the most fun thing you can do in a group, with your clothes on. But I would argue that you can even go further by LARPing your characters. A few years back, I ran a game that took place in biblical times in Israel. But when we arrived to a specific encounter, where the characters had to sneak their way into a specific fortress, I said, okay, let's LARP the shit out of this. And we pack our stuff. We went over to this specific location because it's an actual existing fortress, not nowadays ruined, but still, and went there. And instead of rolling dice, we simply half LARPed the entire encounter, meaning my players would run from side to side saying, ah, I climbed this window over there. And then we ran inside and, okay, now I do this. And another player point, and my character goes through that archway and assassinate that guard that's over there, etc., etc. This could be really cool. And you can pretty much decide how far you want to go with this. You can simply have a session where everyone dressed up as their character, dressed up as a modern equivalent of their character. You can go on location, on a different location, etc., etc., etc. Or simply have everyone really act out their character with accents and exaggerated whatever. And if you're taking it to the next level, why not have a special episode for April Fools?
In the Purple Orange, we wanted to have some fun, and it was April, and so April Fools, I think it was actually the session that was on April Fool itself, but I don't know, no longer remember. It was mostly on me. I had to work a lot before because I had this strange idea. I wanted every player to play a different player's character, but not their actual character. I mean, shuffling character sheets around is fun. It's great. It can make into an excellent, funny April Fools. But I wanted to take it one step further and actually invest. So I created character sheets that use exaggerated over-the-top tropes that we've decided on in our group. For example, Shonan, Uri's character, always hides behind stuff and stabs things with a dagger, and then uses a power of D&D 4 in a way that was not meant to be used.
Guilty.
And then explaining that actually it worked this way and was that way, and the fluff is not the same as the crutch. So I gave the character of Shonan a power that allowed him to do anything as long as he could explain it in fluff instead of crutch, etc., etc. We have, for example, Aviv Orr, who played a bard, that one of her main signature moves was to teleport over a raging animal. It happened like twice in the campaign, but we all remembered it. Whenever we saw a raging animal, it was obvious to us that Aviv should teleport on it. So I gave her a power that allows her to teleport, and if there is no raging animal, it would create a raging animal under her, etc., etc. It was really over the top. It was overpowered. It was crazy. It was all in the rules of D&D 4. And it was like only three powers for each character. And I gave them to the wrong players. and we played a very exaggerated and satiric, I think, look of ourselves during that session, which, by the way, the session itself was a completely normal part of the game. It was simply the next level of the dungeon that we were already in. I changed nothing. Only the characters and the players were different. And that was awesome. It was funny, and it was a way for us to celebrate us.
Let's move on to switching genres a bit. How about taking your lofty, dangerous dungeon crawl and turning it into a musical?
This happened to me only once, because the main problem with a musical episode is that the players are unprepared and maybe don't want to sing, and that's fair. So once, when we were about to finish a long arc in our Warhammer campaign, I decided that in order to make this memorable, more like a Christmas special, it wasn't Christmas, but I wanted this to be special. So in order for us to remember this, and make sure that we know where we are when we'll get to return to the next arc, which was only like half a year afterward, this episode was all about grander, the grand scheme. And in order to make it more theatrical, first of all, there was a big time skip and everything was in weeks instead of days. And second of all, it was a musical, which means I gave each player the ability to once during the episode burst into song and get extra dice on the rolls. And they don't really need to make it into a powerful, amazing song. They don't need to make it into an actual rhyme. They can, even if they want to, give us like two lines. That's fine. That works. Really? Go as far as you want with it. Invest in it as much as you'd like. It's all improv, so obviously I'm not going to even suggest that you prepare something ahead of time, because it's a session. We're not sure where we're going, what's going to happen. It's a role-playing game. Use it whenever it's useful to you. The important thing is, describe it in a theatrical manner in the game. Make it into a showstopper. Make it into a song and dance. And it's funny that it doesn't seem to resonate well with the rest of things happening around you. That's how musical works. That's the point. You can't change too much, but we can allow you to change a bit of the stuff around you. Just come with an idea. It worked well. It worked pretty well.
And for our final session in this episode, we would suggest a weekend retreat. Now, I do this once a year with my gaming group. It is amazingly difficult to organize because we're all adults and most of us have families and jobs and many other obligations. But here is the secret. If you do this once and it works, then very quickly it can turn into a tradition. Which means that everybody knows that once a year, your gaming group is going on this 2-day, maybe 3 days retreat where you do nothing but eat and roleplay and possibly go to the beach once. And I think we've done this 5 or 6 times, and it is glorious. It's just one of those weekends that I look forward to every single year.
But it's not just the fact that you have like 2 days to play. You also make food for yourselves. You make it into an event.
It is an event. It's a one party convention. It's not just taking the time. This is why we separate this from the all nighter. It is very important that we actually go somewhere else. We take an Airbnb for 2 days where it's just us. A lot of people ask me, so why don't you just meet at someone's house and have a sleepover, which is a fine option. However, for most of us, if you are close by,
yes,
you would be tempted to go and help with things, especially if you have a family, if you have extra responsibilities. It's like the difference between watching a movie at home and going to the cinema.
Yes.
in many places, if you have a decent TV and a decent sound system, the difference is not that great. The main difference, quality-wise, the difference is not that great. However, when you go to the cinema, it's a ritual. You do a lot more than just go to the cinema. True. You buy that popcorn and Coke, which maybe you don't bother with at home. You turn off your cell phone, which is something I do just when I go to the cinema. I can't think of any other event in which I turn off my cell phone. And the whole ritualistic of it, and the fact that you do take your mind off the worries of the day-to-day and focus on something, on your hobby, rather than just make time for it, is a totally different experience, mentally and emotionally. Okay, that's our list of suggestions for a special episode. If you have more ideas, we would love to hear them. If you have taken one of these suggestions to heart and played it, we would also love to hear about that. And if you have any other questions, feel free to email us or PM us or DM us or Facebook message us, etc.
Yes. In summary, I would like to suggest TV Tropes because, of course, we'll give a link in the show notes to the page about episodes. It's a whole page devoted for types of episodes, unusual episodes, that is, not the thing that the series is usually made of. They are, of course, meant for TV, but like you've noticed, we've said episode and session interchangeably throughout this episode. You can and should treat your game as if it is a TV series, at least in this regard, because we can learn a lot, I think, from the serialized nature of other media. And now it's time to take the load off.
This world is carried on the shoulder.
Oh, hey, so listen, we didn't actually record this part because the special episode was recorded as a special episode and we didn't know when we were going to upload this. So we uploaded it today, but Uri and I didn't want to do a taking the load off when we didn't know when this is going to come up. I mean, what if I would tell you about a game that was already done and over by the time that this episode comes up? What if Uri tells you about something that he likes, and then when these episodes come up, he no longer likes it? Time continues on, and things change. People change. Yes. What a world. Thank you for listening. Later out!
On the Shoulders of Dwarves is shared under Creative Commons by Attribution Non-Commercial 4. Intro and outro are by The Cliché Duo, and you can email us at show@dwarfcast.net.
On the shoulders of dwarves.